This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. McIntyre, International Relations. We've been walking down memory lane, 1938, to see can we, from these, well, I can only call them Shakespearean tragic characters, Chamberlain, Schuschnigg, the whole of the cabinet, certainly Halifax, Churchill, the French government, several French governments, Roosevelt sitting there watching this happening and not intervening in any fashion, in fact, not objecting to what comes to be the Munich appeasement. However,
he congratulates them.
If any of this helps us understand headlines today, there are many headlines, Professor. I come to this one more than any other because it seems so deeply ironic given what we're talking about. It's about the meetings that have been going on in Europe, the G7 meeting about the future, and the question about what is to be done about in NATO. And we have Russian missile strikes kill one near central Ukrainian city of Cherkasy. We also have a headline about Russian missiles were fired into Kyiv, into residential areas into Kyiv. At the same time, the G7 was meeting. We have Vladimir Putin to send nuclear-capable missiles to Belarus to counter aggressive West. And this, NATO must strengthen its presence in Eastern Europe in response to Russia's criminal aggression. All of those headlines are in all different directions. They're about Ukraine, they're about the Baltics, they're about Poland, they're about Belarus. The lessons of Anschluss to Munich, are they applicable in any fashion here?
Well, I would say, of course, that they're very applicable. Just as Thucydides' history of the Peloponnesian War of the 400s B.C., is really the prototype. It is the book about war that has everything in it, and it's not a particularly important war, but this book is what people refer to when considering issues of war and peace. Likewise, the story of Munich, which, remember, takes us from September of 1938 in less than a year to war in September of 1939. So I think that of course, Munich has been studied very, very extensively. And what lessons have we learned or have we not learned from Munich? The first is, why are we surprised by what Putin has been doing in Ukraine? The idea that NATO should be strong in the East to counter Russia, well, surely the reason that NATO was created was to draw a military boundary so that Russia could not expand into Western Europe. That was the whole rationale for NATO. It was suspicion of Russia and distrust of Stalin and whatever he was up to. Furthermore, we have already seen when Mr. Putin came to power, we've seen the war in Chechnya, we have seen the war in Georgia, and then in 2014, which is not quite a decade ago, we had an invasion in which Crimea was annexed in violation of guarantees that Russia herself had signed in return for Crimea, for Ukraine giving up nuclear weapons. So I think the first thing that we see here is that there was a rather complacent and somewhat indolent and optimistic consensus in Britain until the catastrophes after Munich, and also in the United States as Cold War revisionism, the idea that the United States was really to blame for problems with Russia and that we ought to be able to make peace with them, which, of course, culminated in 2008, with the so-called reset in the Obama administration, this idea that somehow, even though our systems were completely different, we could get along just fine. And leading Cold War historians wrote that exactly what it turns out that Putin's doing now is inconceivable. Things had changed. So I'd say that the first lesson is be aware of what your own deep preconceptions are. Both Hitler had a preconception about Britain and being friends with it. Likewise, the British, particularly Chamberlain, but this was this went way back. It went back to the to the failure of the Ruhr occupation in 1924 by France, which relegated France to the minor leagues. Essentially, there was a confidence that Russia or the Soviet Union and the West could get along. And we all remember in academia talk of convergence. These are both industrializing states, and the imperatives of that are going to make them reasonable and make their politics reasonable. Now, as long ago as 1974, when President Ford came in, people said to him, look, we may be getting the Soviet Union wrong. We may be underestimating how many weapons they're building and what their actual thinking is about their future. And that led long ago to the formation of the so-called Team B at a time when Bush Sr. was the head of the CIA. And this was actually a very important marker, because although nobody really did anything about it, although I think it influenced the Reagan policies very much, a group of experts came in and said, look, the people who've been making American-Russian policy are just mistaken. And this, of course, was demonstrated quite dramatically with the end of the Soviet Union. But it should have been quite clear to anybody, at least by the time of Anschluss, that the deeply held belief that Germany and Britain could be friends was based on fundamentally different understandings of what this friendship was going to be. So what we have now is America and the American political intelligentsia, whoever they may be, awakening to the fact, not all of them, but many of them, to the fact that Russia under Putin is a very different animal. It behaves very differently than we have been convincing ourselves that Russia or the Soviet Union behaved. And we have not been thinking about this. We have not been preparing for it. So now, like Chamberlain, when he finally decides that it's time to go to war, it is all, as they say, wars are come as you are. It's all very, very improvised. It's not strategic. So one of the lessons I would say, the first is don't fall in love with your particular assessment of the country. Constantly reassess, constantly look at discrepant information, constantly consider alternatives. Don't get stuck in one received truth. And having said that, then think about the many different directions that developments might take. The third thing, which would have been a good thing for the French at the time of the Rhineland, react decisively. If the French had sent police into the Rhineland, Hitler would have withdrawn. But the French didn't want to. They had their own preconceptions and their own ideas based on the Maginot Line and so forth, that they didn't have to do anything. And finally, you need highly informed, professional, and very nimble diplomacy. We need diplomats who are able to turn on a dime, reassess the situation, rather than trying to keep alive their ideas. And in our reaction to Ukraine, I think you can see, and we still see it, a conflict within our own government and in NATO and all the rest about, well, what do we really make of Russia? Are we going to be able to be buddies with Russia and they'll give us natural gas and all the rest? Or do we have a real problem here? A Russia which has got great ambitions for irredentism or creating a massive power which are incompatible with ours. And I think the last point I would make is that whatever your diplomacy is, you've always got to be very, very strong militarily, because that gives you credibility in diplomacy. And also, if it should come to a fight, it means that you can win the fight. And unfortunately, American policy has been very much one of arms control, seeking peace, even in the most difficult places like North Korea, and gradually reducing our actual military punch.
Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.